Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from CPR Laundry. I am joined today by the gorgeous Melissa Ram. I've known of you for a very long time. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm nearly there because obviously it's just before Christmas. Are you ready for Christmas?
Absolutely not. I've bought one present. I'm useless.
you've got spare time now. I don't understand why you're not sorted it out yet.
This is my first day in the house and I left about 2 weeks ago, so I've been busy.
Busy. Enjoying yourself. How dare you?
Yeah, busy enjoying
myself.
How dare
you? I wanted to get you onto the podcast. Obviously, you know, you're still in your career and we'll get into that, but you've also got a few side hustles going. And I love side hustles because that's the starting point where you're starting to think about your exit. So it's like that wondrous moment where you've still got the boat money to rely on, but you're already trying to think and plan ahead. So that's why I wanted to get you on. But if you could just obviously start at the beginning, what was Melissa Ram doing before yachting, or have you just always been at sea?
I've always kind of been at sea. So I grew up in a little seaside town on the coast of Northern Ireland, and going to sea was just what we did. We went boating at the weekend, all of our holidays were on the water. So a natural progression into working on board yachts or boats made sense. I have been sailing since I was a kid, and I decided that sailing was a career that I wanted to do. And that I didn't really fancy going to university to study something that I was never going to use in my adult life. So I went to the UK Sailing Academy at UKSA to do my yacht master. Alongside that, I did a degree in operational yachting science, which basically covered yacht design, engineering, sail design, and that kind of thing. So I sort of got myself a bit of a foundation degree as well as a commercial yachting ticket. So I did my yacht master, and then I got straight into yachting at the age of 18.
Wow. So can you tell me, obviously, before we get into your qualifications, what's it like growing up in a seaside town in Ireland?
Quiet. Very quiet. I grew up in a little tiny village, but we had a little house on an island just off the coast of Northern Ireland, which meant that my childhood was very different to every other kid's. You know, every holiday, every weekend, we went to this little island where I learned to row and I learned to sail, and I got a lobster pot for my 10th birthday. You know, some kids, you know, they wanted dolls and princesses. No, I wanted lobster fishing. So that's kind of what it was
like.
It's
like an island. What's on the island? Anything? Nothing? You're just very
nothing,
simple.
Really. Just little cottages and, you know, building bonfires with your friends and building tree houses and that kind of thing. That's how I grew up, just living sort of on the land and enjoying the water. And any moment, any chance we had, we were in the water just, you know, rowing or kayaking or, you know, being towed behind a boat on some form of an inflatable. You know, I think that's where the real love for the sea really began.
So it's just like a dream for a parent. You can't go anywhere. It's an island.
No, the kids can't escape. No, exactly. You know, any weather, rain or shine, we were outside, welly boots on, raincoats, go and play in the mud. You know, somebody recently asked me what sort of TV programs did I watch as a kid. We didn't really. Only, you know, very rarely, you know, we didn't do TV so much. We just we were always outside. And even if we were at home, you know, my dad always had a boat project going on. So you're always painting something or antifouling something or sanding something.
Antifoul.
I know, it's horrible stuff. But yeah, from a young age, it was always just a natural progression for me.
Can you remember, like, at what age were you like, oh, I just want to keep, you know, like, were you a teenager and you're just like, the boat stuff was getting more,
I think, you know, I was about 13 and I joined the Sea Cadets in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
I was with them until I was 18 and I was rowing for them and sailing for them. And one of the instructors, he said to me, you know, Mel, the Sea Cadets is, of course, a charitable organisation, but we also shape people to go into the Royal Navy. And he was like, would you be interested in doing that and taking it all a bit more seriously? So I said yes, and I was interested. And I come from a little bit of a military background with family. So I thought, okay, let's give it a try. And long story short, it wasn't the right thing for me, which is probably a good thing because I'm not a very regimented person. Not very good with being told what to do.
Slightly different vessels as well. If you've been messing around sailing and stuff, they're not, that's not
it's not the same, you know. So I decided that that wasn't for me. But the next best thing was yachting. And it was when I was 16, a family friend of ours, he's now a yacht captain, told me about the industry. He suggested what to do to get qualified, and he said, look, this is what you can do in the next couple of years until you're 18. Do as much racing, as much sailing as you can. So that's what I did. I got a job in the local marina. Some of my dad's friends had some nice race boats, so I went racing with some family friends and just sort of helped out and did some crewing here and there and learned how to be a bow woman and learned how to be a helm and learned how to trim and all that sort of stuff. So it kind of just escalated.
What's racing like? So sailing for fun's one thing, but yeah. I get the impression that racers take it very seriously.
Oh yeah, we turn into different people. Like, my racing is not kind, bubbly, lovely Melissa. It's that needs to be done now, or we're going to be 5 minutes late, you know. So we all take it a little bit too seriously at times, especially like local clubs, you know. I've seen like my local club at home take it way more seriously than the Matic world, you know. I'm getting super, super competitive over, you know, dropping a kite. Oh, you're 3 seconds too late with your kite drop. And it's like, come on, guys, you know, let's go to the pub.
Heard that the Isle of Wight is, you know, the race that's very serious. Everybody gets, you know.
It is, yeah.
I thought it was just a jolly, you know.
No, people get seriously competitive. You know, there was only last year a boat ran aground because they were trying to, you know, to tack over the top of someone else. It's just like, it's crazy.
So obviously how did you just try the Navy, or did you actually go in, or?
No, you do the application process. So I did the application process when I was 16, because I had a medical issue when I was a kid. I had a bad back injury. You have to be so many years out of a back injury for insurance purposes, so it meant that I would have had to wait 2 years before I could join, and I just thought, okay, it's not the right thing for me right now, maybe yachting is better. So I gave it a try, did all the induction, and just wasn't for me.
Yeah, it is a different, again, you know, obviously the yachty world and, you know, the Navy, they are lifestyles, you know. Yeah, you are picking a lifestyle.
Yeah, and they're two very, very different lifestyles.
Very, very different lifestyles. I mean, you know, yachting, you're not signing up to go to war.
No, no.
Although some crew members take it that kind of seriously for a dinner, but, you know, it's not life or death. No,
it's really not.
No, it's not. No one's going to die if there's no napkins on the table. You know, like it's, we can just take a breath. You
so everybody just relax.
So yachting. Where did you do your training? So obviously you're in Ireland. Did you try and get as far away from your parents as possible, or just did it kept it local? Or like, what was?
There just isn't that many options for sail training in Ireland. Okay, there are for small boat stuff, but when it comes to doing a yacht master and getting, you know, super yacht training, it doesn't really exist. So the Isle of Wight was the next best thing. And it had come highly recommended to me by some friends. So I thought, okay, that's a good option. So yeah. I went there.
I mean, I suppose it's not, you know, although, don't get me wrong, I'm sure Ireland gets some nice weather, but not this time of year. You're going to have to be a brave sort to go out in it.
Absolutely.
But good wind. You'd be fine.
That's the good thing, yeah. There's always when to go sailing, but often too much.
Too much. Before we get onto the yachty stuff, like, you know, when you're great, did you have any scary moments? Like, you know, losing an oar, you know, when you were a kid?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was rowing in a little inflatable, like a little dinghy. when I was maybe 8, maybe 7. And I had my life jacket on, and my my little dinghy was tied off to the pontoon on a really long line, so I could row myself around. And, you know, mum and dad were sitting on the shore watching me, and I wasn't far away, and they were watching, and it was all very safe. So I, dad's phone rang, he was on the phone, and mum was talking to a friend. So I, being the stubborn, independent woman that I have always been since I was a child, decided I was going to get out of the dinghy on my own. So I rowed to the dock. I hold onto the dock with one hand, let go of the dinghy on the other, and before I know it, I'm upside down in the water. Like, in the water. Like, panic, panic, panic. And of course, my dad comes running over, picks me up by the back of my life jacket. He's like, Mel, you okay? You know, that for me was probably the first moment when I was a kid of, okay, the water is dangerous. Like,
yeah.
You can't do these things on your own until you're ready, until you've learned. So that was my dad still tells that story to everyone. Oh, Melissa, she works on a super yacht now, but I remember when.
I'll be rolling that one out at Christmas, probably.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, no, it's good that you had a reality check young.
From a very young age, yeah. I think, you know, respecting the water and the sea is such a big part of the job, to know that it is dangerous. I mean, so many people just take it for granted and take it as a jolly, but there is an element, a huge element of danger.
There's a lot of danger, yeah. I think. Did you need to do your yacht master's then? Did you just breathe on through it?
I intentionally went and did my yacht master. I didn't pass the first time because my yacht master instructor was incredibly sexist. So I did my first exam, and then I withdrew from my exam. I said, I don't want to do this anymore, because the guy was basically setting us up to fail, me and the other girl on our course. So I withdrew from my exam, and I rescheduled it for 2 weeks later, and I said, okay, let's do it again. And I did it again, and I passed. I think so much of it was I'd gotten inside my own head so much, and I wasn't quite maybe, you know, confident enough in myself to put his ideals aside, to then just get on with it. So then I did it again.
Did you feel, when he was teaching you, did you feel there was a bit of an undertone of like, oh, you're a girl kind of thing? Even if it's not...
Even if it's not plainly said, it's there. Yeah.
You're expecting you to be like a whingy girl.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, at least you stood your ground, you know, not many would.
No.
So did you have a different examiner the next time?
A different examiner, yeah. And I passed it the second time round. But I would say with, not easily, but with a lot of effort and a lot of hard work, but I did pass, yeah.
Good. Oh, obviously, you've gone on to do great things. So when would you say is your first super yacht experience?
My first super yacht experience, so I moved to Palma after I did my yacht master, and I spent my first season sort of doing temporary work, doing bits of racing here and there. And it wasn't until the October that I got a full, proper, permanent job, which wasn't even supposed to be permanent. I joined the boat to do a crossing, Atlantic crossing. We left Palma and we were headed for Grenada. And we were about halfway across, and I was only on as delivery crew. They had somebody else temping to trial to do their deckhand position. And for some reasons, he didn't pass his trial. And I was on watch that evening with the captain, and he said, Mel, we've been impressed with your skills so far on board. Would you like to stay, do the boss trip? If they like you, we can keep you as the deckhand. And I just was like, okay, sure. You know, I'd stepped on board to fill in a position for their second engineer because I had a yacht master and an AEC. I can do the tools, definitely not an engineer. I can fix basic things, but I'm not an engineer by any stretch of the imagination. So I was just happy to be there, to have been given the opportunity. So this captain took a chance on me, and I was there for 2 years on that boat.
Oh, wow.
She's a very well-known big schooner, sailing yacht Athos. And it was just fantastic. I loved every moment of it. I was on that boat through COVID. Through lockdown, just worked for really fantastic people with a great crew.
So obviously with with you obviously starting out, because Palma's more of a sailing hub than anywhere else, would you say, in the Mediterranean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's why
I went to Palma. I was on a cadet ship with 30 people, 28 of them were guys, there was two girls, and all 29 of them went looking for work in Antibes. And I thought, well, why am I going to pitch myself against all of them in the same way that I've been doing for months? I'm going to go to Palma and be different. I've always been different. So I thought, why would I change now? Why not just
keep
going? Not
that different, but you know, there's better beaches and it's warmer.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you have to dock walk?
I did a little bit, but I was lucky that I knew someone in the industry already. So I got in touch with them when I got to Palma, and they were able to give me some day work, and they introduced me to friends. And then, you know, the usual, you meet a couple of people in the pub. Okay, I need somebody to come and day work for us for a few days here. I need somebody for a few days here. And then I met someone. I had a partner. He was big in racing, so that was really helpful. So I was able to get on some race boats and do a season with some racing. And then it kind of just snowballed from there. And then I was with the right group of people, met the right person, and then got that temporary job, which then progressed into a full-time job.
When you were kind of making the connections to get, did you ever feel that you were overlooked for them to prefer a male?
Yes.
Or did you,
100%.
The Lots fact of that times?
Male due to cabin arrangement still comes up enrages me. It makes me very angry. I've definitely been put forward for jobs. Been put forward for jobs and been not chosen because of my gender. The attitude of the man will do it better because he's stronger, because the male body is made better to do these things. And the reality is that strength isn't always the win, you know. Sometimes if you need to be super strong to do something, you use the equipment, you know. You don't.
It's one of those, I suppose, that is a real hot topic for women completely at this moment in time, you know, with what's going on with the Olympics and everything else. Yeah. Does biology, you know, just as it's kind of a judgment on your capabilities and skills, where's the line in, you know, how it should be perceived, I suppose, is what I'm, you know, what I'm getting at. You know, for you, like you said, you know, a lot of the work on a deck on a sailboat is more technical skill than brute force.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, I mean, I've been able to get the jobs that I've gotten because I've got the technical skills. But there's still such an old school mentality amongst many owners, amongst some captains, not as many as it used to be, that, oh, well, you know, well, we'll hire a man because they're more trustworthy, they're more able to do the job, they understand it better. You know, a woman possibly could not navigate a ship through the
not that old chestnut. She can't read a map.
Yeah, it happens, trust me, it still happens out there. And it was a big driver in why I started my little side hustle. I knew we were going to get to that, but it was a big part of why I wanted to start writing about the industry, because it has to change. And it is changing massively. Like, from when I joined the industry, there were so few females on deck. And now every other boat has a female on deck.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that I think there's, you know, what will come out in the wash when we start to, because all of these topics are really hot at the moment, and everybody's kind of discussing them to kind of work out where we're at. Because a lot of it is grey areas, you know, like there is a lot of jobs that women can do just as easily as men can do. But then there is a lot of jobs that also, you know, perhaps men wouldn't be that great at, and women, you know, women are good, and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it comes down to opportunity, you know, just the opportunity to even try, you know, because you don't know what else you can bring to the table. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I've been really lucky that I've worked for some great captains and owners that have not been that way biased. You know, they've been very forward thinking and very supportive. But I think a lot of it was because I put myself in a position where I wasn't willing to, for me, it was, I was working on deck or I wasn't working in yachting. You know, for me, it was a career focus. Like, it is my goal. You know, I'm not here to work for a few years to make money to go traveling to Bali. That wasn't the plan, you know, it was a career goal. So I wasn't willing to accept a deck stew job just for a season.
You don't want to go on the interior.
Because once you put yourself into that bracket, it's really hard to get out of it again. And I was trying to explain this to a recruiter not that long ago, actually. I mean, I have 6 years experience in the industry and I was still getting emails for deck stew roles. And I said, I'm sorry, have you read my CV? You know, I have the experience. Yeah, but you know, like, to just get another job, maybe you should consider. I was like, no. Would you say this to a man? Would you suggest that they should take a deck stew job? No.
No.
It's still there and it's still so ingrained in the whole industry. But,
well,
it's slowly changing.
You know, take it as a compliment. You're just very adaptable. You can do two jobs. Like every woman on the planet, we are multitaskers.
Yeah.
We can do everything. So, yeah, just take it as a compliment. You know, you're probably skilled enough to do both, which obviously a man can't do.
Though you say that, but I've seen quite a few bosuns and first officers wearing a skirt to help out, and they're pretty good.
Do they have to wear the skirt? Like, that sounds
horrific.
No,
it's
Oh, both since my time, I would not want to see them in skirts ever.
No.
You know, they bent over. You'd be scarred for life. Scarred for life. So obviously with, you know, I'm not saying it's annoying, you know, that they you know, when they approach you with, that you're more adaptable because you're a woman. What's about salaries? What were your experience? Were they fair on that?
I've been lucky. I've always had pretty good, pretty fair salaries.
Yeah.
I've been lucky in that perspective. Salary progression once in a job is something I think the industry needs to progress on. You know, there's not very many boats that run, especially private boats, where you don't have like a fully integrated management system. There's very, very few conversations about salary progression or a salary review, you know, once a year or every 6 months.
Well, progression, completely, like, in, you know, regardless of whether it's progression on the boat, but progression out, they've only just started talking about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you don't want to be on board or if physically you can't be, they've literally, obviously we know a few, you know, pioneering individuals, they're not long started trying to create these pathways for individuals that want to leave the industry.
Yeah. Very true.
So it's not really surprising, I suppose, that it's just, but then I wonder, whether women could get overlooked because how long are you going to be on board? I think that's,
well, this is the question that a lot of people, I mean, I'm young, I'm 24, so I don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon or stopping my career anytime soon. But it is a big question, I guess, for owners, for management, for captains. So how long, if I invest my time and money into this lady's progression within her career, how long am I going to reap the benefits of that for? And it is an interesting question, but I guess the main way to solve that is open and honest communication, is to sit down and talk about it, do a review. Okay, you want to go and do your master's ticket. You want to do your master's ticket, we'll pay for it, but you have to guarantee us another 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, you know? It's difficult. Well, like I said, again, females, you know, we do have different choices to make.
Absolutely.
We're just about to do a series on fertility. So, like, you can, you know, at 24, you could easily work in the industry until you're 40.
Yeah.
But the only thing that would probably stop you from doing that
is fertility.
Is children.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but I'm lucky to have a daughter. Because I left it really, really late and I gambled massively.
Yeah.
And we'll go through all of that.
Hmm? Not everybody gets that lucky.
No, but also I think with starting the conversations, talking about women's choices and when we might have to make those choices, you know, you can bring into at 24, you know, first, you know, freezing your eggs kind of thing. So by the time you get to the age where you're like, yeah, I'm ready to take a bit of a break, you've still got that option, kind of, well, an option, because you just don't know until you get on it. Literally.
Yeah, well, that's true. Until you really start to look into it, you don't know.
You don't know what hurdles. So, you know, it's always best to have, you know, I think women are planners. And I think, but there are some topics that women just don't, you know, when you're 20, you don't want to think about kids. I had no interest in kids whatsoever. I didn't want to play with them. I wasn't bothered. I was like, I'm off, kind of thing. But now reflecting, I was like, I should have thought a bit. Not like get into the gory details of what it's like to have children, but like at least going, you know, banking an option or two, or having you think about it. But also, you know, how much is it to do your unlimited ticket? You know, well, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, for me, unlimited tickets, I won't do them because, I mean, I'm always going to be in the sailboat side of things, so I don't need unlimited. Just 3,500 master potentially, but you know, that's looking into the future, and I don't know if I want to run the boat, if I want to be a captain. I'm quite happily with being an officer, so we'll see, you know. But you're right, you know, you spend thousands and thousands on these courses, you know, maybe you invest that in a house instead. Or
I don't know off the top of my head how much they cost, but they're a deposit on a house.
Yeah.
Well, no, maybe not a house, but part, big chunk of a deposit for sure.
Yeah.
And you do have to weigh up. So obviously as a female, I don't imagine that you'll ever stop sailing, but sailing for a job might not be able to happen, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Kids change everything.
For sure.
Sleeping patterns, everything. So you're going to want that flexibility later on down the line. But the courses are really expensive. Now, I suppose if you are a guy and you're in that stereotypical relationship, you know, you can stay in the industry until you're in your 50s.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, there are lots of options for financing courses. There are things like the Slater Fund. There are, you know, you can go into the commercial side, do your tickets, and then come back out into yachting. So there are options, but yeah, generally most people pay for them themselves, and it was a solid chunk of money.
Mm. So do you, obviously starting to dip into what your little side hustle is, what is the ladies on deck community like?
The ladies on deck community is... It's good, you know. We do try to support and build each other up, you know. There are several group chats, too many, more than I can remember, of different women on deck at different levels, at different skill sets, on motor, on sail. I have been sort of always in the sailboat side, so I've sort of collated a little community of girls that I know that I've met on other sailboats that are, you know, similar to me, grew up in a similar way, have the passion for the sea, and that kind of thing. There is a bit of a community of women on deck, yeah.
Yeah, it must be quite, well, again, you know, strength in numbers kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It must be quite good. What are one of the common things that they talk about? You know, what is one of the big bugbears that kind of comes up?
The male due to cabin arrangements on a job description that they're overqualified for and are told they can't apply. That's something that comes up time and time and again in every group chat, from people that have captain's qualifications to people that are only a couple of years in, you know. It's still a problem. We're slowly working on it becoming less of a problem.
Yeah, I imagine it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's used as a bit of an excuse sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they just hide behind it.
Yeah.
So you're taking a break at the moment. You left your boat 2 weeks ago. Does it feel weird not to have a boat?
Yeah, really. Yesterday, it was my first day in the apartment of doing nothing. And I just didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, okay, so I've had a coffee and I've made breakfast and I've done emails. Just sit down and try and write something. And I'm just thinking about the boat because I know that the boat have just picked up the owners. So I'm like, okay, I wonder if the guys have done this. And has this been done? And I was like, I have a problem. I think I'm
You've got to give yourself time to, zone out.
I did the classic girl thing. I stuck the Grey's Anatomy on, stuck some popcorn in the microwave and was like, okay, just mind-numbingly Grey's Anatomy. Eat my body weight in popcorn and I'll stop thinking about the boat. And it worked. I was able to relax by the afternoon, so that was good.
No, it does, like we said, it's a lifestyle, isn't it? It tells you what time to get up, what your routine is, and, when you step out of that, it takes a little while to...
It shapes our whole lives, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
It dictates when we see our loved ones, it dictates when we sleep, when we eat, what we eat. It's weird going from 2 years of having a fantastic Italian chef to, I have to cook for myself again.
Mm. Yeah, it's rubbish. I don't rate it at all.
No.
I'd love to just have somebody else to cook for.
Yeah.
Especially when my daughter just, it's anything, but she wants chicken nuggets all the time. Trying to get her anything, to eat anything else.
Oh, bless her.
What are you supposed to do with it? There's only so many times you can arrange it on the plate.
You can make it.
And the few times I've ended up eating it myself because I can't be bothered.
Making something else, that's always the struggle.
So you're off for 2 weeks. So what are you... gonna look for another job or kind of quietly enjoy the holidays?
My plan is to quietly enjoy the holidays, invest a lot more time into my side hustle, Shaped by the Sea, which is a blog / slowly integrating into a social media management section. So I have two clients, which is great. Very unexpectedly, they came to me rather than me going to them. I was lucky that it came out of nowhere and it's going really well, which is great. So I'm investing a lot of time into that, setting up things in a more formal way and sort of building Shaped by the Sea into a little bit more than just a blog about the industry and about my life. But from now until Christmas is chill time.
So what made you want to start Shaped by the Sea?
That's a good story. I started the Instagram page 4 years ago, during lockdown, when I was on board Sailing Yacht Athos. We were in lockdown. The boat was not going anywhere. We weren't doing very much. And I was really bored. So there was lots of beautiful boats in the anchorage. So I went and I started taking photos of them and photos of the boat that I was working on. And I was posting them on Instagram. And I came up with the name Shaped by the Sea for the Instagram page. So I just, it was just me being a boat nerd, really. Then fast forward to July of 2023, I was on board the boat that I've just left. And the first mate had a medical issue. He had to go on medical leave for a couple of weeks in the middle of a boss trip. And we were struggling to get somebody in to come and help out. So I stepped up. I started running the deck and taking on more responsibility, which was great. But it was something that I hadn't done before. And I like to cope with, with stress and with dealing with a lot of things on my mind by writing. It's something I've done since I was a kid. So I started to write. And weirdly, I thought, I'd like to share this with other women that have experienced the same thing, that do the same job. Mm-hmm. So I then find myself building a website and publishing a blog because I thought, it's time. It's time to start sharing my experiences, my thoughts, my feelings about the industry, about being a woman on deck, but just being on deck, really. I didn't massively want to make it about being a woman because then I would lose a whole lot of readers to... you know, oh, this girl, she just hates men on deck. You know, I didn't want to do that. So I sort of tried to brand it that it wasn't too female on deck driven, and that it was for everyone. So I write about everything, and just throw the odd bit of, you know, girl power in every now and again. And I essentially started it as a way of just dealing with a bit of stress, you know, and writing things. And then the more that I shared, the more I wanted to keep sharing, because people reached out and they said, I had this the same experience, or this happened to me. The one that I got the most response back from was, I wrote about something that happened to me on a previous boat where I had a bit of a medical issue, and the blog got over 400 reads, and about 6 people responded to me and reached out and told me their story of a medical issue that had happened to them, which massively changed their life and how they saw themselves. And that for me was like the catalyst of, okay, this has to keep going. I have to keep writing because this is making a difference to people's lives. And that's why I do it. That's why I write the blog, because I want to help other people doing the same thing as me, that have the same everyday little struggles or the big struggles, and just sort of like give them an out of something to read. But also there was an aspect of it of, every time I go home, my family say, what do you do? You know, what do you do for a living?
You say, read the blog.
Yeah, so I say read the blog now, instead of, you know, they'd all say, you know, oh, we watch Below Deck, we know what your job is. No, don't, please, no. So I get them to read the blog instead. And it's nice. It's a nice way for my family, my extended family, to sort of keep up with what I'm doing, and you know, friends that aren't in yachting to sort of have a bit of an idea of why is Mel always at sea, you know, and that kind of thing. So that's why I really started it.
It sounds really good. Did you have to consciously, did you ever feel exposed doing it, or do you only share what you feel comfortable? Because the thing with anybody, whether it's social media, you get obviously lots of, you have to find that boundary line of what you're happy to share and, you know, what you think you should share.
Yeah, absolutely. When I wrote a blog about body image after my surgery, that one I wrote 6 months before I published it, because I wasn't ready to share it. I wasn't ready in my own personal journey to put it out in the world and say, okay, everybody's going to read about what happened to me, see the photos of what I looked like before and to afterwards. And with that does open a possibility of scrutiny, because people on the internet are nasty. So it took me a little while, and I read something that somebody else had posted. I think it was on LinkedIn about, somebody else had posted an article about body image and their personal experience. And I thought, okay, well, if this lady was brave enough to do it, then why shouldn't I? So I put it out there, and it was really well received. You know, I've been really lucky so far with Shaped by the Sea. Nobody's really given me any negative press or said, you know, this girl has no idea what she's talking about, because I only ever write about and talk about real life experiences that have happened to me. I write about me, or I interview other people talking about their lives. I don't write about what I saw happen to somebody else on a boat.
Yeah.
I write about my own experiences. So I try not to open myself up to any negative connotations or blowback. I mean, there's always blowback from anything. There's always somebody's going to say, oh, that girl doesn't write very well, or who does she think she is making Instagram videos? But I don't care.
No. There's always people with opinions. Everybody's got opinions.
Everybody's got one. Yeah. Absolutely.
Everybody's got opinions. I think that's one of the things that I've, with Pearls, like I go out of, I don't like going on social media. You know, when you're not feeling great, you know, yeah, and you're not looking, you don't feel like you're looking great, the last thing I want to do is put my face on social media. But, you know, absolutely, there is that. You need to. But then there's just sometimes I'm just like, no.
But people connect with the brand because it's you, because it's authentically you, you know. Somebody had said to me, oh, Mel, you haven't put anything of yourself on your social media in ages. I was like, oh, yeah, but I'm not, you know, not feeling my greatest. My skin's had a bad outbreak. you know, and that person said to me, it doesn't matter. Why people read your blog is because of you. You know, it's not because of the Shape by the Sea and the nice logo. It's because of your personal journey. It's because you bear it all out there and you share everything. There was one blog that I wrote maybe a few months ago, and it was about sexism and yachting. And I thought, oh God, you know, should I be beating this drum? Should I put this all out there? Because it was pretty raw, you know. I wrote my real thoughts. And I thought, you know, I work for a great male captain and a great male first officer, and my owners are fabulous, you know. Are these people going to read it and take it the wrong way? So I let them read it before. I was like, do you have a problem with me publishing this? They were like, no, get it out there, Mel, because not everybody's like us.
That's really good. It's one of those things, it surprises you. You've got to just put it out, you know, put it out there a little bit to give you the confidence to do it, you know, because you can get all inside your own head.
Absolutely. I do it all the time. You know, sometimes I let my first officer read blogs before I publish them. I'm like, does this sound stupid? He's like, no, Mel, just fucking hit the post button, would you? And I'm like, okay, I'll just post it then. And then normally I put my phone on do not disturb and don't look at it for like 6 hours, because then I find myself obsessively checking if somebody's read it or not. So I just turn it off and I just walk away, go for a run or something. And then I have a look at it later and I see if there's any readership or any blowback or anybody's thought, oh, this is rubbish.
I'm getting to the point where I don't want social media at all. I don't know. Like, I'm really not. Although I have to admit, I've got a bit of an X addiction. It's kind of, it's peaked because.
I don't use it. I don't use it.
It's only like the run up to the presidential election. It was just like loads of, one of the things that everybody was banging on about, and I was just like, right, okay, well, let's have a look. You know, is it just a cesspit or, you know. I've got a bit of an addiction to that a little bit. But everything else, you know, I think it's because taking photos, especially when you're getting older, and I've mentioned, unfortunately, I might be heading towards pre-menopause, the joy. You just don't, I don't feel like I look like I should for Instagram. Do you know what I mean? It's complete bullshit and I really shouldn't.
Nobody looks like they should for Instagram, because if we all looked like one of those Instagram models, we'd, you know, the world would be soulless.
Yeah, no, it's true. But social media is a love hate. But I think you think it's changing a little bit. People aren't.
I think massively, yeah. I think I look at the younger generation, people younger than me, and there isn't, I don't know how to say this without being rude to a whole generation, there isn't so much authenticity of people anymore, you know, like everybody's just what they put on their social, or they act how they've seen, you know, a Kardashian on social media. And I'm like, just be you, stop trying to be someone else. Just be who you are.
Some amazing developments. I was watching the news the other day, and there's a club in Manchester, and they give out stickers to put over the cameras on your phones. So to get into the club, this is to experience clubbing like when I went clubbing. And we're going back in time for them to get this retro experience where you can dance like, you know, there's people in the room that are watching, but like it doesn't matter. Because people don't dance, and they're not, you know, what are you going to a club for if you're not actually enjoying it? So they're doing like, it's like a retro night where they cover up their cameras and just like, well, what do? Well, you just dance.
You just dance. Just enjoy yourself.
You know, because it was the reason why they started it is they had a DJ come on. It's like kind of Calvin Harris or whatever, and nobody danced through the whole set. So everybody just had their phones out and they didn't actually, most people didn't dance. So like, what's the point in seeing somebody like that if you're not going to get into it? World's coming full circle. I think they're going to realise that it's really good to not have any evidence of your 20s.
Well, mine's all on social media, which is...
Not the fun stuff.
I'm very selective with what I put on socials now that I run a sort of business through social media. Even on my personal page, I'm like, should I post that? I think twice before I share a rosé lunch story these days, you know, even
what's
things
one
like
of
that.
Those? I haven't had one for ages. I would be plastering that up. I'm like, yeah, I've got them out to lunch.
Yeah.
What advice, like, so obviously if you're talking to your 18-year-old self, you know, what three bits of advice would you give her, or any 18-year-old right now that's listening is like, I don't want to polish stuff in the interior at all?
I would say absolutely stick to your guns, believe in yourself, and do not let a recruiter or a yacht manager or a captain bully you into taking a job that you don't want. I would say to, you know, fake it till you make it, because that's what we all do. Nobody's got a rule book of life. There is no right way of doing it or wrong way of doing it. You just have to do it. To just put yourself out there and believe in yourself. Because, you know, if you have that little bit of self-confidence, that will show a captain, a manager, a first officer that, okay, this girl's got what it takes, you know. And if you want to work on deck, you know, it sounds silly, but don't be a princess. You know, you can forget about the nails, you can forget about the full face of makeup every day, because the makeup will peel off once you go in the sea to clean the waterline. And the nails won't last 5 minutes if you're servicing
nails. Who has nails on deck? I didn't even have nails on the interior.
I know, but Therese, I've seen it. People dock off looking for a deckhand job and they hand me their CV with these absolute wonderful claws.
Are these?
Yeah, those are lovely.
These are my Christmas nails. I wouldn't want to haul lines or a chamois in them.
No, exactly. So just, you know, drop the, you know, even if you, you know, I like to get dressed up outside of work. I wear jewellery. I occasionally wear makeup.
I saw a photo of you in a fabulous black dress the other day.
Yeah, in Paris with my sisters. That was amazing.
It was amazing. You look great.
Thank you. It's, you know, it is a man's world, and you don't have to be one. You just have to be better than one.
Yeah. It's, yeah. You know, but that doesn't... rock it up with nail varnish on. You've got to help yourself out a little bit.
Yeah, you got to help yourself out. Be prepared for...
Just help yourself out. Do you want to just get to the bit where they're talking about you getting the job? Or do you want... Yeah, that's a big learning curve, I suppose. Yeah. So what you thought, you know, you're 24, so you don't need to think about leaving just yet.
No.
Have you done anything in your life to kind of get you more prepared for when that exit comes?
Yeah, I have, you know. I, last year, with the help of your wonderful husband, set up a pension and an ISA.
Yay.
To sort of build a future for myself, because I spent so many years earning stupid money in the Caribbean, spending it all on Pigeon Beach drinking rosé. You know, we've all done it.
Sounds awful.
It was awful. I have some great memories, but not a whole lot to show for it. So I started to, some fabulous clothes. But I started to put money aside, and I started a bit of investment and a pension, because I thought, you know, okay, you know, Mel, you're not going to be young forever. You need to start thinking about the future. And I would like to buy a house. So that's in the near future plans, to sort of be building a bit of a
Now you've set it up. Do you even notice?
No.
Like, now you've got your finances kind of organized, you know, do you actually even notice now?
No. You still it just get goes. It's just great. And the, you know, I think starting the blog and starting the social media stuff and having that on the side sort of give me a bit of a thought of, okay, what could I do after yachting? You know, if I do decide that I want to have kids and settle down, then what are the options for working on shore? I mean, I think I'll always be within the yachting industry in one way or another. So I think, you know, doing that sort of stuff, I don't know if it's something I'd want to do forever, but it's definitely an easy option to get out of yachting, you know, if I needed a job. But I think mostly the writing, you know, I've been doing a bit of writing for a few people, you know, there's a couple of things in the pipeline, potentially writing for some magazines and stuff. So there's, you know, there's a couple of little things that will come around as time goes on. But at the moment, my big focus is the reason why I left the boat I was working on is I want to get my Officer of the Watch, 3,000 gross tons. So that's the big plan. So I'm just waiting for some funding to come through. And then early next year will be study. Which I think will make for a great blog series of what it is to study for an Officer of the Watch. And there's not a lot of extra content out there to help people through study methods and that kind of thing. So
how long is it again? It's quite long, isn't it?
It's about 6 weeks of courses. And then to do the oral prep course, which is normally like 2 weeks, depending on who you do it with. And then to get an exam date and, you know, have everything organized and approved to then set the exam. So, I mean, I sort of said, you know, up and, you know, I'm giving myself until June, July time. So I'm not going to rush it. I've, you know, been quite sensible with my planning. So up until then, you know, otherwise work-wise, I'm just going to freelance, just go do deliveries and like, just enjoy life, enjoy boats. You know, it's very easy to get consumed into a boat and only see the negatives. So, you know, when you're working full time with not a lot of time off. So I think I'm just going to go enjoy boats a little bit, maybe do a little bit of racing, maybe do some deliveries, sort of just, you know, enjoy the industry.
Cows then this year.
Pardon? Yeah, maybe. Cows. Actually, we'd love to do that. That's, yeah, it's definitely on the list.
Right. It's been lovely having you on.
Thank you very much.
It's really, I can't wait to just hear what's going on next, to be honest. I think, you know, your brutal honesty about the path that you've taken is really, really valuable. And it's quite brave, you know, to stick, you know, your experiences out there. And I'm really pleased that you're reaching other ladies, well, sailors in general, not just ladies, you know, they're appreciating that brutal honesty. So yeah, I can't wait to see. Everybody needs to check out the blog. We'll put it in the details below. Before we finish up, and I'm going to have to go and do some Christmas shopping, not even wrapping yet. I've not even done the Christmas. I'm very behind. We like to finish on a crazy story. So can you tell me a crazy story of your time at sea?
Without something that won't implicate me into trouble.
Everybody says this. You can send me an anonymous one later.
This is just funny, actually. I was working on a boat and we were doing a summer in Ibiza, Mallorca. And we had like 12 weeks of different sets of the family. So, you know, the owners, then the daughters, then the friends, then the cousins, then the grandparents, round and round as you go. And I think we were like week 8 and we had this group of, you know, adults in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s. And they were great fun, loved to party. We did a themed night every evening. So we had like Olympics and an Asian night, and we had a 20s night, so everybody got dressed up and they were really happy to get involved with the crew and all of this stuff, and it was very good fun. They were using the water sports equipment through the day, and we packed everything up, you know, and I was on night duty, and I went to put some towels in the wash, you know, to finish up the day and help the girls a little bit because they, you know, cocktails, and they were super busy. So, you know, everybody pitches in on a sailboat. So I was just downstairs helping them out, and I come up on deck and I see all these wet footprints along the side deck from the side boarding that was closed. And I was like, what the hell is going on? So I look over the side, there's nobody in the water, and I walk down to the cockpit, and there's this guest drenched head to toe with a sea bob in his hand. And I was like, is everything okay? Yeah. So we tried to use the sea bob, but it was on charge, and we didn't think about, you know, like putting a cap on it or anything. So they just threw it in, and the guy jumped in after it. But obviously, it didn't work. So they come up the other side boarding that was open because I was just cleaning everything up for the night. So he climbed back on board with the Seabob and he was like, I'm so sorry. And he absolutely pissed. He jumped in the water with the Seabob, like completely wasted.
No.
And I was like, oh my God, I don't know this. I was like, thank God you're okay, that you're safe. I was like, I left for 2 seconds. I was off
the
deck.
The Seabob's had it though.
The Seabob, bless, he had to go for full service. He was brand new as well. At least he was still in warranty. It was fine. But oh my God, it was hilarious.
Oh, you need eyes in the back of your head for guests. Yeah. Don't you?
Absolutely. The poor guy was beside himself. I was like, have another gin and tonic, mate. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. And thank you so much for coming on. We've really, really liked it. We'll get an update soon. Yeah, absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.
So, ladies or gentlemen, if there is any boys that listen to our podcast, if you've enjoyed this episode, we have plenty more for you to enjoy. And if you're wanting any of the details of Melissa's blog and Shaped by the Sea, we will put it in all the details below. But until the next time, see you later.